Welcome, friends. James Corbett here. It is the 7th of August, 2013, so welcome back to all the listeners who have patiently waited out my summer hiatus as I've been out traveling on assignment for Global Research TV, but I am back working on the website now, as you may have noticed, with the recent release of my Boiling Frogs Post eye-opener report, and the videos and podcasts and interviews, etc., will be returning to normal over the next few days, so I hope you will continue to join me for that. But today we have a conversation lined up for you today with a friend who has joined us on the program previously a few times now, and that's Leon Pittard of Fair Dinkum Radio, fairdinkumradio.com. And for people who are not familiar with him, of course, you can go to fairdinkumradio.com, the link which will be linked up in the show notes. You can also check out some of our previous conversations in the archives at corbettreport.com. Leon, it's always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us today.
G'day, James. Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Excellent. Well, it's good to talk to you again. And we are going to be talking today about a subject that's close to home for a lot of people in the audience, or should be close to home. And that is the subject of food independence, which I know is something that's near and dear to your heart and something that you've been preoccupied with for a long time. And for people who don't know, you, of course, on your YouTube channel have also been documenting your own backyard garden that you have with some raised beds. Quite a nice little setup that you have there. That's at youtube.com/fairdinkumradio1. And I will link up that channel and some of these videos in the show notes for the interview as well. But why don't we start talking a little bit about your own background in backyard gardening and what got you into it in the first place?
My dad was always a keen gardener, and he sort of studied naturopathy a bit, and basically always grew his own herbs and garden, you know, vegetables in the backyard. So right from a young boy, I was taught the basics of how to grow our own food. And as life progressed, I had different experience on farms and different things. And so I guess the soil and the garden has always really been in my blood. I've always been an outdoor person. And what I come to learn was that, you know, growing your own food, obviously, apart from the fact that it's a self-sufficient thing to do, but it's really the quality of the food that you grow that's the most gratifying and the best thing for your own health. And of course, since starting this work and joining the research community and becoming more involved in studying what's really going on around the world, it's become more obvious that we have to endeavour to separate ourselves from the dead food industry and from the corporate food monopolies that exist. And, you know, I'd like to point out that my garden, just like my mind and like all of our listeners, it's always in development. It is by no means finished, but we've had this garden going for about 3 years now. We have about 14 fruit trees. We have peaches and apples and cherries. We have figs and a good selection. We have oranges and lemons, and we have at least two of each variety, one early and one late. And that is so that the food comes on at different times. And the idea is that you will always have food in your garden. And my aim really is to, I guess, develop a food bowl in this little area we've got so that you could go there any time in the year and basically eat. And that's the object of where the development's heading, James.
Well, that is such an important object, and as you say, that's one of the crux issues of that food independence, which is really at the heart of this, getting off of the dead food industry, as you call it, which I think is a very apt way of explaining it. So let's talk a little bit about your setup in particular. Tell us about the raised beds that you have, how many plants you have, and what it is you're planting.
We've got 5 different raised beds at the moment, and that's actually developing. But in those raised beds, I've developed the soil. And a very important part to understand about growing your own food is that it's like we look at the inputs. And when we look at even the research community, we're often talking about the media, which is an input into the life. And food is really just another input into our lives that sustains us and actually helps to grow our health and sustain our health. And so plants also need inputs. And so it's important to understand that we start from a good base. And I focus a lot on actually developing the soil from a variety of different methods, composting, and adding lots of high nutrition to that soil, so that when you do actually grow your seedlings and grow your plants, it's important that your plants are full of that power and minerals and life that's in the soil. And so just as the blood is the life for our body, so the soil is the life for the plant. And so I focus a lot on minerals and actually building the soil as a base, and having that soil base really high powered, so that the food we eat, actually you can really notice a difference. In those five beds this year, we've basically sustained ourselves 100% with greens, as in lettuce and spinach and high-powered greens like broccoli. We're growing our cauliflower. We've got garlic in all the time, snow peas, beetroot. And what I try and focus on is that we actually graze off the garden. Most commercial planting enterprises basically grow a vegetable till it's huge, and then they pluck it out. And it's, so you've got a crop all coming on at once. But what we do is actually eat little bits of it all the time. In other words, you can be taking, we eat the beetroot leaves, the broccoli leaves. I put in juices. I juice organic carrots, apples, and broccoli leaves and stems. And that provides a real high-powered chlorophyll mix with the vegetables. And the thing is that with having your mineral base really powerful in your soil, your plants actually grow a natural ability to resist pests. And, you know, of course, we don't use any pesticide or anything like that. And if the plant is healthy, you basically it's going to resist pests, or the pests aren't going to be a problem. I mean, I don't mind if some caterpillars or something eat a few leaves. I mean, it doesn't matter. You grow enough food to share, right? And the idea is not to look at those things as bad, because they're actually all a part of the ecosystem. And so basically what we do in those beds is focus on really good soil quality, which delivers really good plant quality. And obviously when you eat that, then that those minerals actually are the minerals that our bodies are needed. And so what we do as a maintenance program, I actually put seawater on my plants at 100-to-1 ratio. I dilute the seawater 100-to-1, and I spray my plants and my trees every week with that mix. And you can see a difference in the leaves. Like sometimes if trees or plants are lacking minerals, they'll be you'll see they're spotted, or they'll have discoloration. And if you maintain this seawater application, the plants will actually absorb all those minerals, and you can see that the leaves change to a glossy, healthy colour. And in some of the videos, you'll see that our leaves, they're shiny. Naturally, it's not shiny. You can go into the corporate food industry, you can't see lettuce that's shining, or beetroot leaves are actually glowing at you. And, you know, we can go down there and basically pick the leaves or snow peas and just eat them straight off, and beautiful, sustaining food. And my wife makes beautiful broccoli quiches and cauliflower soup. And, oh, James, you know, grow your own food. It's just so satisfying, you know. And I can feel it in my own health too. And, it's a great, wonderful, satisfying thing to do.
Well, you raise such a good point about the commercial and industrial farming processes that require the homogenization of these crops and growing them all at the same time and making sure that there's no pests, because that would be just terrible, as opposed to the sort of natural process of growing things to graze on them, to eat them as they come, to, oh, if a pest eats a few leaves, it's not the end of the world. And that I think shows just how far detached from that process of natural food production we've come, that we tend to think of food production in terms of those industrial farming terms. But let's concentrate a little bit on what you talk about there, which I think is a very important point about soil development. For those not gifted with the green thumb like myself, walk us through a little bit about how you go through that process of developing the soil.
Well, soil can be developed basically out of anything, any plant matter. Any plant matter can produce food. It can be lawn clippings. It can be scraps from your garden, from your table. All of our food scraps are 100% put back into the ground. And in that soil, I have earthworms, and earthworms actually eat eat that vegetable matter, and they'll eat anything except for garlic and onion. They don't like garlic and onion, and no flesh, no meat. They don't, of course, eat dead meat. But any vegetable matter, the worms will actually work through that matter and produce castings. Now, it's important with the production of soil that you have roughly a 50-50 wet-dry mixture. And that is, if you're starting a small composting situation, most of your scraps out of your kitchen will be fairly wet. In other words, they'll be green scraps, which contain a lot of water. And it's important to add like dry matter to that. And if you've got the balance between wet and dry and you turn the soil regularly, you'll find that the natural bacterial action and the microbes will actually break that plant matter down into soil. And what I start off with a small amount of soil that I obtain from our river flats here, and I add all of our food scraps to it. I have a horse which I stable overnight just specifically for his manure. And any manure, it doesn't matter, it can be horse or cattle, and that manure goes in. And it's important to keep turning it. It's important to keep oxygen and air into the actual soil, because if it's left to sit and it's just damp, it can tend to develop mold and not break down as easily. But the more you turn it, I basically turn it every week. And while the worms are in there, the worms are the best thing because they're actually producing castings. Now, those worm castings are 100% high-powered fertilizer. Basically, worm castings, you can't get anything better. You can grow anything in worm castings and it'll never have disease. And so if you've got a bed of compost, which the worms have worked through, basically that is going to be a very high-powered, really good quality soil. And it's important to add things to it like charcoal. If you can obtain charcoal, it's a very important source of carbon. And carbon is a very important component in soil, which helps activate the cellular activity of many of the microbes and many of the other life that actually live in the soil. And I point out on one of my videos, I show a little bit of a shot where you should be able to actually dig the soil. And when you dig it, you see a lot of activity. In other words, you want worms jumping out and moving around and little tiny insects and microbes. This shows that there's life in the soil. If you turn soil over, there's nothing there. Basically, it's dead. We need living soil, just like we need living water. And just on another point here, you know, like to obtain minerals in your body, you can use Celtic salt in your water, and that will put the 84 minerals that are in the ocean in your water. And my daily intake is 2 liters of water at least with the Celtic salt in it, and just put a pinch of Celtic salt in it, and that will mineralize your body just as really good quality mineralized food would. So what we might be lacking from, let's say, food we have to buy that we don't produce, if you mineralize your water, that will help mineralize the cells in your body, which helps, you know, all the rest of the parts of the body.
Well, that's exactly right. And if the base of the vegetables and the plants that we're growing, then I guess the other side of that equation is what comes out the other end and what we're going to do with it. And I suppose the question is, for example, you mentioned juicing broccoli leaves and the like. What are some of the other ways that you use the vegetables that you grow other than simply eating them raw?
Well, basically, we eat a lot of raw food, a lot of salads, of course, and I spend a fair bit of time in a truck for like 3 days a week. So when I come home, I sort of have this cleansing program where I drink about 2 liters of juice every morning, every day I'm home. And that includes carrots, apples, and any greens in the garden. In other words, any leaves that might be, basically getting a bit older, I put them in the juicer. And so I use it. Now, the pulp from that juicer then goes back into the garden. Preserve the food that you make so that you make an abundance of one crop. Say, for instance, if you grow enough potatoes for the year, we grew 12 months supply of potatoes many years in a row, and we would store them on straw. And basically, they would keep right throughout the winter and virtually for the 12 months. So you can grow garlic and onion and potatoes, which you can dry store. And then you can wet store many of your foods, like especially things like tomatoes, for instance. And we would preserve tomatoes. We generally preserved about 60 bottles of tomatoes a year, and that would be used with any cooking. You know, you could use that with rice or with pasta or soups or vegetables, anything at all. And that would just be simply tomatoes that would be pureed and preserved in bottles using the several different systems you can use. We use like a Vacola bottling system where you actually heat the bottle and the food in it. And, you know, eventually we will provide video updates for people of how to do that. But there's also a dry method where you can actually dry your fruits. You can develop a drying system where you can actually dry your fruits and keep them through the winter. And that's the aim, to actually have enough food, obviously, in your good season to keep you through the off season.
Absolutely. It's such an important point. And this all is part and parcel of what goes into this, the production, the preserving, the preservation of these foods. But it raises the question for people out there who are perhaps not involved in this in any way, how one starts to get involved in it. Because I think that's probably one of the major mental barriers there is for people out there who aren't currently growing their own food, is, so it sounds like a lot of work. I don't know if I can do that. What can you say about people who are on the fence right now or just starting to put their toes into the water, so to speak, here? What can you say to encourage them to get involved in this?
You know something? Look, it's not hard. It's like anything in life. Once you start applying yourself, and it's like study, James, or research, once you start to look, it opens up all these different avenues. And I would say for people beginning, a really good place to start, and, you know, a lot of people don't have fun in them, and keeping them in a cool place with a gauze cover so that they can breathe, and you turn them, and there's different methods of sprouting. But sprouting is also a really good way to get high-powered nutrition into your body. I mean, things like broccoli seeds, for instance, are like something like 200 times more powerful for fighting cancer than what the actual broccoli heads are. Now, the point is, you wouldn't have a feed, you know, a big meal of broccoli sprouts, but you would be able to use it on sandwiches or in salads, whereas you would have a meal of the broccoli heads, for instance. So there's a place for that. But I'd say sprouting is a really good place to start. And just get yourself, if you do have a place, a bit of land or even a veranda, just start with a small box and just start small. And once you start to see that plant grow and you begin to see the results, that will encourage you to do more. I have like a policy here where I plant food every week. And that's just a habit. And I make sure I plant food every week. Now, if I plant food every week, I harvest every week. And that's a very simple equation. If you continually apply yourself to it, you'll continually get something back. And this is what the Creator's given us with the ecosystem around us. It's a system of life where when we give, we receive. And it's just like research, James, or anything else in life. You know, like, you know, the corporate system wants us to sit down and basically be dumbed down and do nothing. And we basically die when that happens. But when we activate ourselves and we put something out, when we put our energy out and we plant a seed, that seed's going to grow and that life will come back to us tenfold. And that's I'd encourage anyone to just start small. Just start with a pot. You can grow food in pots. I've seen verandas on units, flourishing ecosystems with an incredible amount of food grown in small areas. And it's not really the amount that's important. What's important is the quality. You're better off eating one high-powered tomato than, you know, 5 kilos of them. And so I'd encourage people to start. Even sprouting is a really good place to start because your greens and all your chlorophylls and your sprouts have an incredible amount of enzymes in them, and those enzymes are critical for the maintenance of good health at the cellular level in our body. So start with sprouting, maybe a small garden box, wherever you are, and then just build from there. But continually build. Just keep growing. Don't be satisfied with, I guess, a small amount of knowledge, you know. Continue to put more in, and the more in, you'll get out, you know.
Well, I guess it's like anything else in life. You have to start with baby steps, but eventually those baby steps turn into a run, and eventually you're even flying. So that's very inspirational, and it's great to watch the clips as they come out about your garden. So I'm going to be definitely keeping my eye on your YouTube channel to see more about preservation and the like. But for people who are looking for more resources on this, is there anything you'd like to recommend people who are interested in looking for more information?
Not really, James. I suppose there's plenty of research out there if you just look for it about handy gardening tips and how to do it. There is I will send you a link to a very encouraging, inspirational video I did watch where this person's growing tons of food just on a normal sort of house block size. And I would refer people to that just to see what is possible in a small area. And this person is obviously on a commercial scale in a township in the United States, and it is just a very good video to watch. It's not very long, it's, you know, probably 15-20 minutes, but it shows how much food can be grown in such a small area with no waste. Basically every single part of that process is recycled, but you know, I encourage everyone, just get out there and do it. And you know, for those of us who are in the research community, often we spend a lot of time in front of computers and inside. And the actual doing of the gardening is the therapy as well. It's actually not just the intake that's important. What's important is getting out into the fresh air and letting the sun shine on you, and watching the birds and listening to the, understanding the ecosystem around you, understanding that we are a part of creation, and that the part we play in creation determines the ecosystem around us. And so that if we love our environment and we want to make it better and we put some effort into that, our environment will be beautiful. It will be a lovely place to live, but the benefit will also come back. You know, we will be refreshed from getting away from our screens and the problems of life, and actually absorbing life from the creation around us.
Well, I often talk about that process of trying to make our world a better place, but it's interesting to think of that in very concrete, very tangible terms when we engage in the process of gardening and actually growing new life and engaging in that process. It's absolutely, I think it's something important that people need to be doing for themselves. So I hope at least one person in the audience will be motivated by our talk today to dip their toe in that water and to start getting off of the big food system. All right, I think we're going to leave it there for now, but just again, for people who are perhaps hearing you for the first time, tell us a little bit about Fair Dinkum Radio.
Yeah, website's fairdinkumradio.com, and our YouTube channel's Fair Dinkum Radio 1. And yeah, look, we just deal with a lot of issues that are facing Australians down here, pretty much same issues facing everyone worldwide. And we, like gardeners, we're developing with our understanding, and we're trying to be a voice of the people in Australia, reflecting our people's concerns on a lot of different issues, and hopefully trying to find some solutions to a lot of these complex problems. And as you know, James, there's not one solution, there's many, and we're all a part of it. And just encourage all our listeners to just get out there and be a part of the solution.
I couldn't agree more, so I wholeheartedly echo that statement. I think we'll leave it there for now. Leon Pittard, fairdinkumradio.com, thank you again for your time.
Thanks, James. Great to be with you.